work. Father Martin, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Art, and how are you?
I am very well. Better than the news. I want to tackle right away, Father, a couple of breaking kind of news stories. One, I started getting messages that an exorcist, one that you may know, was very brutally murdered in America. What do you know about that, Father?
Yes, the one man we're both thinking of, his name was Alfred Kuntz, and he was a parish priest in Dane, which is a parish in Ohio, in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, all right.
In Wisconsin. And he was found at 7 o'clock in the morning with his throat cut from ear to ear.
His throat cut?
Yeah, from ear to ear, in his own blood, face down into it, and with obviously various acts of desecration of his body, which are normally associated with Satanist-inflicted death. Father Kuntz, of course, and by the way, he was a very popular parish priest with his people. He had done exorcisms, but very, very private. Most of us don't talk about them because they usually involve confessional material, and Father Kuntz was a very good priest and never spoke about confessional material.
Had he been in communication with you?
Yes, we had been in communication.
Do you know offhand if he was doing anything at the time? I'm sure the police are probably asking about this, but I mean, it's an obvious question.
They are, and they are refusing to give any of the more lurid details of the mode of his death, for the simple reason that they don't want to. They suspect it's somebody within his vicinity, not a stranger. And there are only, I think, a couple of hundred people. Well, no, about 700, 800 people involved. They're certain it's not a random act of violence, somebody who wanted to steal or was caught in the act of stealing and simply flailed out. They're convinced it wasn't a random act like that, but it was a deliberately set up thing, and that at least one person was involved in it, perhaps more. Kuntz himself had just been doing radio shows with a priest friend whom we all know very much, Father Fiore, and they returned home late at night, late being about 10 o'clock in the evening. We know that he was alive at 10:30 because he made a telephone call or received a telephone call, I forget which. But then the following morning at 7 o'clock, a young man who came to assist him at Mass, etc., found him lying, as I said, in his own blood with this very, very sinister mode of death etched on his body. There's no doubt about it that it is related. Whether it's related to his very confidential activity as a priest in regard to covens of warlocks in neighboring areas, we may never know. We may never know. We may never know because, number one, the police have a habit in this country that whenever there's, and it's a good habit on the whole, whenever there is any real Satanist activity of a shocking kind, they don't publish the details that indicate the Satanist connection. They just they publish the bare details of a murder.
Why do you think that, Father?
Well, it's also, you're asking me why I think it's a good idea in general, because it doesn't evoke the copycat syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
These things do, because about 200 years ago, they stopped doing exorcisms in public, precisely because it evoked the copycat syndrome in people. Imitators.
Well, you have told me many times, since you have done so many exorcisms, that there is real, very serious, very real danger. Is it not possible, it's got to be possible, that that in his work, in some way, in the middle of some exorcism, or as part of one, an ongoing one, or, you know, who knows?
I have no doubt about the answer to your question. I foresee and interpret is no doubt about it. The death was not random. It was not an act of personal vengeance, somebody who got annoyed at him for some particular thing. It was in connection with his work as a priest and in the area of demonic possession.
Father, have you ever been concerned at that level? Have you ever, without being specific, because I know you can't about specific exorcisms, mm-hmm. but have you ever been concerned for yourself in...
Yes, very.
Same way?
Very, very same way. But you learn after a certain time to take that added risk, and you take precautions. But yes, surely, and at times the menace or the threat is more patent, more obvious than at other times. Sure. And sometimes it's quite voluble, it's quite expressive. You're warned. And more than one good priest in that part of the world, especially one or two very prominent ones, got telephone calls pointing out that they would go the same way.
Oh?
Yes, and one of them actually had to hire a bodyguard, or was given a bodyguard by the police because of his prominence.
Well, you've been a very prominent exorcist. Have you received threats?
Oh, yes, in the past, yes. Not recently, but in the past, yes, very much.
Not as part of this or connected?
No, not part of this, because I wasn't in any way related to this. And as one person told me, sort of happily, because we don't belong to an umbrella organization, exorcists, in other words, those engaged in this area, because we don't belong to an umbrella organization, they can't identify every one of us and therefore pick us off. But they do, we are picked off, all right, there's no doubt about that. And they're not the first, Father Kuntz is not the first priest who's picked off as a priest, and as somebody who blocked or interfered with or spoiled Luciferian plans. There's no doubt about that.
Well, the fact that he is now dead would tell me that Luciferian plans are somehow still underway in whatever case.
Oh, yes. I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are.
Is evil in America, evil in the world, increasing?
Well, the only way I can answer that question without sort of sensationalism, Art, is as follows, that since 1972 or 3, when the group I am associated with started, and it's a very quiet, discreet group, but since then, incidences and types of demonic assault have increased. First of all, the increase has been about 750%. Since that time.
750%.
About 750, judging by figures. And this is in the northeast corner of America, the tri-state area, essentially, although it takes in outlying areas, too. But then the types of possession. We have now the two phenomena that are very interesting. We have the phenomenon of the 20-something or 30-something that comes and says, look, Father, I want to such and such a job, or I want to get this particular woman. I want to make this marriage.
Yes.
I want this money. And I made a pact with Satan, with the devil. And I got it. And now he won't let go of me. This didn't occur before, in my experience, that in the limited experience I had. And secondly, then there's the...
This is how recent, this phenomenon, how recent?
The last 10 years.
The last 10 years.
Last 10 years. And then there is also the second form, which is a bit off-putting, to put it mildly, mm-hmm. that we now find the age is younger. We find children, those that we would technically call children, 6 years old, who are obviously not merely obsessed, but on their way to full possession.
There was a recent case in Arkansas that I'm sure you heard of, in which a couple of young fellows decided they were going to kill their classmates and teachers and pulled a fire alarm.
Yes.
and brought rifles and lots of ammunition and simply started shooting students
wildly.
And teachers.
That's right.
Just started shooting.
That's right. I wish I knew the details of that case, but again, the police are singing mum, as they say. They're saying nothing about the details, and there's a great protectiveness web wove around those young, you know...
Of course, yes. Juveniles, yes.
Juveniles. But we don't know the details of it at all.
An awful lot of that going on, if that corroborates what you were saying.
There is. And there's much more than is reported in public by the media. And in several states, there's an agreement, sort of an unwritten agreement between the police and the governor. There's an unwritten agreement that no details will ever be published without formal permission by the media or by the police of any obviously Satanist or Luciferian happening.
Well, I understand that on the one hand with regard to the possibility of copycat crimes. Mm-hmm. However, if this really is on the increase in America now, shouldn't we know about it?
Yes, I think we should. The incidences, it's more frequent as far as the incidents of it. And if you drew a graph, you'd find an increase of over 700% since the early 1970s.
Now, who keeps track of that? Are you the one?
We do in this northeast corner of the United States. That's why I'm only talking about that, too. And I could make oblique references, but they'd be anecdotally, as regards evidence, to other parts of the country.
But you're sure of what you're saying with regard to the Northeast?
Yes, I'm unfortunately rather sure of that. And what has come to light is that it is not so surprising for a lot of people that there are covens amongst the very educated class, architects, doctors, lawyers, priests, brokers, and the leisure class.
These are people who have made pacts with the devil.
That's right. It's really the best, the more accurate way of describing it would be that they have indulged themselves in the worship of the goat, of the prince, of the serpent, of Satan, of Lucifer, and they lead perfectly normal lives. They're jewel merchants. They travel. They're prominent in their own way, but they do have this indulgence.
Father, here's a part of that I can never understand that has never made sense to me, and that is, if somebody were to make a pact with the devil, then obviously the implication is if the devil is there to make a pact with them, to make a deal, to make their life, their short mortal life on earth, pleasurable, with money or women or travel.
More interesting.
Whatever it is they want.
Yes.
Then they are aware of the presence of the devil, and they are obviously aware then...
Oh, yeah.
Of the presence of God as well, and they nevertheless make a conscious, stupid, short-term, blind choice to take what they can get in this lifetime. And to embrace one, you must embrace the other. It's not like it's some wishy-washy prison.
I know you do. It is very not easy to understand, except when you talk with them, when they let their hair down and peel grapes, as we say, and when they're on their way to being cured of what they've, or healed is the proper word, you find that there's an exhilaration and a satisfaction which is both sensual and sexual and mental when they really indulge in Luciferian worship. There is a peculiar exhilaration.
Like a drug, then?
Yes, it's a peculiar exhilaration. And, of course, the godly instincts in us all, the angelic in us all, because we all have something angelic and something godly, besides everything else, a lot of other negative things, that is quenched. And... you find in them a horror of anything what we call sacred and holy or sacrosanct, or the idea of the sacred, of the awesome.
I only heard this once, Father. I interviewed, we talked about this, I interviewed a Satanist. Her name was Patsy.
Uh-huh.
And this caused a great deal of controversy after the last program that I did with you. I got many, many messages about it.
Mm.
Patsy was a devil worshiper. No question about it. No question about it. Toward the end of the program, she revealed to me that her husband had murdered her little child,
mm-hmm.
a several-year-old child. And
mm-hmm.
and she said, I said to her, well, you're sure not going to be with your daughter, are you? In other words, your daughter's going to be in heaven, and you're going to be acknowledged you're going to be in hell. She said, oh, no, I took steps to ensure that my daughter would be in hell with me. And I asked you about that. Was that possible, I asked? And you said, yes. And by the way, you're not the only one who said yes. A couple of other experts said the same thing.
Sure, it's possible.
And people just went berserk. They said, no, it can't be.
I'm sorry, it is. You see, the sometimes we moderns think with a very peculiar and artificial frame of reference as regards the human soul and the human mind. We're not talking, if we really are realistic, we're talking about the basic inclination of the human soul, the human spirit, and not about some informed concept.
So we are making these statements based on what our own frame of reference is.
That's right, exactly.
Not what spiritual reality is.
Exactly. And it's a frightening thing when you come across what we all know is called bad seed. It's a frightening thing. It's like the two little boys in England that were... that boy in England who killed off two of his little
yes.
children. It's a frightening thing when you meet it, because it's utter art. Let me try and convey it to you and your listeners. You come across this extraordinary...
Father, I'll tell you what. We're at the bottom of the hour.
Okay, why don't we wait?
So why don't we wait, and this is something I would like conveyed.
Sure.
Stay right there. Father Malachi Martin from New York City is my guest. And we are about also to discuss what has happened in the Vatican hours ago. In all of man's living memory, there has not been murder in the Vatican until tonight. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Broadcasting to 20 states and 5 Canadian provinces with 50,000 watts of Twin Cities Radio.
God bless us.
You're listening to AM 1500 KSTP.
Saint Breakoff was the fact that there's nothing more appalling for the mind that I have anyway, than to come across a person technically considered a child with the hard glare of consummate hatred and complete lack of the normal reactions of compassion and feeling and understanding.
Right.
And we do find that today, I was going to say increasingly, but there's a certain increase amongst the age group of five to eight. And that's a very disturbing thing. And it's impossible to say that it's developed by TV, by violence on TV, and that sort of business. We don't know. There's no official inquiry into it, because many of the people who should be, like, for instance, there's one section of the FBI, I think, a bioethical laboratory or something, I forget the exact title of it, it's one of their institutes, institutes in Washington, is supposed to inquire into it, but they poo-poo the idea of active Satanism.
Well, all right, here's what it seems like to me, the layman. It seems like we have some soulless people being born. I mean, even little children, certainly when I was little, I remember I understood life, the value of life, and right and wrong, and now we have children that are killing, and when asked why they did it, they get really interesting answers, like to see what it would feel like.
That's right.
That sort of thing.
That's right.
This is from what I would consider to be a soulless being. Either that or otherwise, you covered the ground, television, the rest of it. So then why? What's happening?
Well, those of us who are engaged in the field of demonology always find, finally, the footprint of the goat, the footprint of Lucifer. And that is a very distinctive thing. And what is disturbing is that many times young persons of this ilk are very brilliant mentally.
Mm.
They're not stupid. They're not dull. They're not yokels. They're not stupid. On the contrary, they're quite intelligent, outstrip their peers.
Well, in an academic sense, yes.
In an academic sense. And that's a bit frightening because they're intelligent and they dodge the issue. And the whole thing is very disturbing. And, of course, it goes back to the breakdown of the family as such in our population. I mean, take for instance the figure, which is solid, that 33%... of all births are illegitimate.
33% of all births are illegitimate.
That's right.
Well, fully one-third.
Yep. And sociologists are weary and tired out depicting the general tendency amongst the illegitimate to all sorts of perversions and deficiencies, societal and personal. So I suppose that's part of that picture, but there's still this footprint, this
footprint
touch
of
Satanism. Yes, it's a smell, it's a print. You know that the some being with a hoof, to use the image, with cloven hoofs, as you know, the Irish have a tradition. That if you have a vision, an apparition of somebody who claims to be the Virgin Mary or Christ, and or a saint, always look at the feet. This is the Irish idea that they can imitate everything except he can't hide his cloven feet. But it's an Irish pishog, as they say in Gaelic. It's an Irish saying, but there's a lot in it. And I know apparitions or appearances of the Virgin that took place in various parts of Europe, and people who took photographs of the visions and apparitions could never get a picture of their feet. It's an Irish thing.
An Irish thing.
Yes.
I have a question for my wife, which is kind of an odd question. I don't know why she's asking this, but I'll ask it, and it is the following. With respect to exorcisms,
yes.
Has it ever occurred, Father, that anybody listening to the tape of an exorcism, or in fact watching a videotape of an exorcism, has, as a result of that, been possessed?
Well, the answer is this. It has happened in our records.
Really?
People who looked at or saw tapes, because we make videotapes, which are very private, or audio tapes of exorcisms, that they, rare cases, rare enough anyway, that they went for a pact. They invited demonic invasion. Yes, I know.
There's a lot of very weak people out there spiritually,
and it's very exciting. I remember well being brought into a discussion about 10 years ago now in New York in a very fashionable hotel by people who wanted desperately to participate in a Satanist exorcism. first of all, in Satanist rule of rights, and doing everything that Satanists did. And I had to keep on warning them, you can't do that with impunity. But they wanted the thrill of it.
Well, I, to some degree, I understand that. In other words, to view an exorcism, to see the presence of the of Satan, confirms the presence of God. And I know you need no such confirmation, but for many, it would be a confirmation of that kind. That's why I have a hard time understanding why those who have confirmed that Satan is as real as can be can choose that path. It's just unimaginable to me.
Because one basic reason is that once you delve in, once you tamper with it, it gives, it does infection. It gives power to that evil spirit, and you can't easily get out of it. There's infection.
Not all right. Physical. You were advisor to two popes.
That's right.
Tonight there is news that just hours ago, for the first time in living human memory, actually about 150 years, they estimate.
A very good way of putting it, in living memory.
Yeah, there has been, well, it says a member of the Pope's elite Swiss Guard apparently shot and killed his new commander and the official's wife Monday night, then turned the gun on himself, all within Vatican walls. A next-door neighbor found the bodies. The Vatican spokesman said this was all done in what he called, quote, a moment of madness, end quote. What in the world could be going on in the Vatican?
Well, I'll tell you, Art, a word to the wise. With anything like this that involves the inner life of a institution which has now centuries-old precautions against publicity and being known what really goes on there, one has to be very, very circumspect and careful about any details released about something that they can't hide very well. It's very hard to hide the death of two officials.
Yes.
And the wife of one. You can't hide that very well.
Well, it's not being hidden. Believe me, it's a lead news item. I've got the Reuters.
They can't do anything about it. But as to the details, the devil is in the details, as they say. And we don't, the details have not been published. We do not know really what happened, except that three people are dead, and one apparently, according to the official account, by his own hand. A moment of insanity, momento d'insania, yes, that's one way of covering the issue. It was a general blanket.
A very careful statement, a moment of madness.
Yes, it's a very, it's a nice way of conceiving, yes, there was a dreadful thing. What it does indicate is this. Murder, the killing of another human being, the shedding of blood, is one of the sure signs of demonic interference.
But in the Vatican?
Well,
is that a likely target in place, or is that an unlikely target in place?
No. Remember, just two popes ago, one pope said, Paul VI was his name, he died in 1978, and I knew him very well. He said, the smoke of Satan has entered the sanctuary. And I think you remember a book of mine published in 1996 describing a Luciferian ceremony within the precincts of the Vatican. And remember that the Vatican, the Pope, has, in his entourage, he has a chief exorcist. We all know him, Father Gabriel Amort. And there are eight employees, exorcists, that work both in Rome and Milan and Turin. So there is a lot there. What we've just seen, the crack has opened, and we've seen one effect of it. Put it like this, Art. For somebody in my position, from what I know of how this institutional organization works, it is impossible that there be a triple death by violence within the precincts of the Vatican, amongst Vatican people, unless it is impossible that should happen without demonic interference. Because the thing is so, should be in principle, so sacrosanct and so preserved from such activity that it might take place outside, but not inside.
I was there. I was in the Vatican. And to contemplate that occurring is almost beyond...
I know. I realize fully how it has impacted you, as we say. But my word to everybody is, we won't know the details for a long time, if ever, in our lifetime. Just as other assassinations that took place in the Vatican, we haven't got the details yet.
The Vatican is its own sovereign state, is it
Absolutely.
Not?
Absolutely.
So that the investigation, the details of it, the suspects, the people who would be caught, and then I have no idea what would happen in the Vatican if they came up with suspects. How are things handled in the Vatican?
Oh, they have their own way of dealing with that.
So Italian law in no way bears on the Vatican.
No. None. Now, normally, let's take a banal example. If somebody is found inside in the Vatican Museum trying to make off with a valuable chalice or something,
yes,
they of course, put him in the Vatican prison, which they have, and they call in the police. And he's, you know, a normal thing like that.
And then they are turned over to Italian authorities.
Yes, they are. Normal evil. Normal violence.
Normal evil, yeah.
Yes, normal. But anything which... really comes from deep within and betrays the presence of the... betrays that footprint again. And this does. That's dealt with in camera and dealt with away from the prying eyes of the media and of the world. It's impossible for them to hide everything. And very early on, we all knew that... something had happened, but the race in the various news media, the CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, to try and get some substance to what they were hearing was fantastic to watch. Of course, nothing came out because the Vatican has means of choking off everything.
Well, the pressure on the Vatican from the media over this is going to be big.
It is going to be big.
And do you think they will just hold their silence?
They will, but there's always the inevitable tipster, the inevitable sale of news. And that's what will probably happen.
I would imagine that Catholics all over the world, which look to the Vatican spiritually,
yeah,
will want to know if their spiritual capital is under siege.
That's right. And then... you know, Art, there's another consideration which is painful for me anyway, because I am a papist, as you know, in spite of the fact that I have my criticisms of the popes I've served with and popes I didn't serve with. And I have strong critiques of the present Holy Father, who is my pope. But I have strong critiques of him. But on another plane, this is a dreadful slap in the face to John Paul II. Because this happened under his watch. No matter how you cut it, he's the boss. He's in charge.
So really, it works in the Vatican like it works in Washington.
Oh, yes, it does.
Good
oh,
economic
yes.
times,
oh,
the
yes,
president gets
does.
The credit. Bad economic times, the
oh,
president
yes,
gets the blame.
Exactly. Oh, yes, it does. And you see, it does reflect on his administration. It does reflect on the spirit he has installed now for almost 20 years, you know, as Pope. And a lot of us have been saying all along, for a long time, There is a spirit of secularization going on in John Paul II's Vatican, which makes possible such incidents as this and other incidents too, which have not come to light.
My God.
So it must be a cause of great anguish to John Paul II.
I'm certain anguish. That is so. But you're saying even the what I would think of as relatively small moves, because it looked very non-secular when I was there. But these small moves would invite in the possibility, you're saying, of what has happened?
Yes, they do. They do. The old Italian saying, which I can't quote any longer in the Italian because I forget it, is that any crack in the wall and the wisp of Satan enters, the wisp of evil enters. And there is a process of a gentle process. The intention is ecumenical. The intention is to be like the rest of the world. The intention is not to be so remote. But there is has been a tendency in the pontificate of John Paul II to be so accommodating. Let me give you one example. New Pope, believe you me, Art, no pope of the 263 popes before him would have sat down with the leader of the voodoo priests of Haiti, which he did. And he said to them, look, Father Maurice, I think Maurice is the name of the head of the voodoo expert priest in Haiti. Look, we are interested in your religion, and you should be interested in our religion. That is something which is unheard of in Catholic tradition. John Paul II himself has gone to a secret island off the Malagasy Republic, where he drank from the sacred water, from the sacred fountain of the god, of the local god worshipped. He sat in a phallus-shaped chair in India and had the mark of Kali put on his forehead.
Oh, my God. Father, hold
that
on.
That is something which, you know, violates.
Listen, are you suggesting that the present pope may himself be under...
No, I'm suggesting that he has drawn on himself demonic attention, which he could have avoided.
All right, Father Malachi Martin, hold it right there. That's plenty, thank you, to digest for the moment. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Do you know when the national debt will become the national disaster that will force the United States of America into bankruptcy? Does a bankrupt America mean personal bankruptcy for you?
His wife shot another man who shot them. Committed suicide, all of this inside the walls of the Vatican, the killing, the first inside the walls of the Vatican in our living memory. I guess there may have been 150 years ago something may have happened. And we were talking about that before the break. Just an incredible, incredible occurrence. And Father Martin began to say that Pope John Paul... I think this bears repeating trying to understand, Father. Pope John Paul has been in some way affected himself.
It must be a cause of great anguish for him.
Well, you said that, but you said that he went to a voodoo. I'm not really caught up on this, Father.
Well, he went to Haiti.
Haiti.
He had a papal trip to Haiti. And during that trip, he met officially... with the head of the, I think it's 15,000 voodoo priests that live in Haiti, and sat down with him. We have the photograph, but I have it here in my files. And one of the things he said was, with typical John Paul II ecumenism, look, we are interested in your doctrine, and we think you should be interested in our Catholic doctrine.
How?
I know. It leaves you speechless. Or,
that's right.
Or, for instance, in years past, when he went to India, John Paul II permitted a young lady in a sari to put the sign of Kali on his forehead with that red stain. And he sat in a chair chosen by the Indian bishops, which had the phallic shape. As you know, the phallus is worshipped in Hinduism.
Why?
Well, these were actions of John Paul II destined to create a great fellowship and feeling. For instance, let me give you an example which struck us all at the time and is not mentioned because people are afraid of being called anti-Semite. John Paul II went for the first time as a pope, he went to the synagogue in Rome. The head of the synagogue is a very respectable rabbi called Elio Toaf, very well known to all of us. And they sat on a stage, or a bema, as they call it in Hebrew, on two chairs, sort of catty corner, facing themselves and facing the audience. And in his speech, which is a very good speech, by the way, a very good address, John Paul II said his only reference was, oh, by the way, you know, our founder was of your race. That's all the testimony to Jesus that John Paul II gave. And when his Vatican held a special Holocaust evening, which was standing room only, it was such a grand affair, with music and with a huge menorah lit by the grandchildren of people who had survived Auschwitz and Dachau and Birkenau, the Hitler camps. In his speech for that particular evening, which was a Holocaust evening, John Paul II consented to have the only crucifix in the hall removed in order not to offend his Jewish friends. We consider that, for me to remark that, it's not anti-Semitism on my part. I've done more, I think, for Jewish-Christian relations than most people alive. It's a story you and I have never delved into, which we will ask another broadcast, please God. But the fact we find this, no pope before John the 23rd, before John Paul II, would have allowed it. If a cardinal did that under any of the other popes, the cardinal would be sent away to live life out in a monastery on the top of the Sierra Madre.
Why has John Paul done it?
It is his form of ecumenism. And look, let me make quite clear, Art, for you and for everybody listening, this man is my pope. He does represent Christ. He is the vicar of Christ for me. And if he were to speak under the conditions of infallibility, I will accept what he says. But I am allowed, nay, I am obliged by my tradition and my faith and by previous popes to critique anybody, priest, bishop, cardinal, or pope, when I think they are in error.
So a pope, then, the pope, now I'm not a Catholic, my wife is, but the pope is supposed to be, is he not, infallible?
Only under certain conditions.
Help me understand what conditions those would be. In other words,
this, he must state explicitly as follows, put it in my language, paraphrase it but accurately, what I'm about to tell you is something I say as the successor of Peter, and I say it with the authority of Christ as his vicar on earth, to be held by all the faithful as a matter of profound, divine Roman Catholic faith. He must say that. Now, John Paul II has never said that about anything, even about the ordination of men and women.
So then he can do that on the one hand, though he hasn't done it, and on the other can sit down with a voodoo priest.
That's right. And in his famous encyclical, which has become so popular with progressive Catholics, it's called Ut Unum Sint, that they may be one. He discussed and outlined the way he would like to take apart the whole doctrine of the Pope's primacy in order to suit non-Catholics. So John Paul II has ventured out along the edges of orthodoxy in his statements and in his preaching. But in whenever he taught, he has never yet taught error infallibly. He's never adopted the infallible mode. The infallible mode is something where the Pope says, I am now doing this as the head of all Catholics. I'm doing it as the successor of Peter, and it's to be held by all the faithful under pain of mortal sin. He has never done that yet.
Do you think he's, of course, very frail now, very old?
He's very frail. And it makes you cry to see his face. His left eye is recalcitrant. He can't keep it open or shut. His left hand is jigging continuously.
Yes.
He doesn't look at you straight in the eye because he's bent over. And by the way, I know a man who frequents him about every 6 weeks from New York. And he says that surrounding John Paul II in his court, in his entourage, the hate is palpable. Hate is palpable.
Now, Father, when you heard about murder hours ago in the Vatican, were you surprised?
No.
You were not surprised?
No. No, I'm not surprised. I'm appalled, of course, and shocked, because three people's lives were snuffed out by violence. But I know that we will, in my lifetime, I may not know the real facts behind it all. And moment of insanity has a beautiful expression in Italian, but tells me nothing about the reality. But surprise? No, I'm not surprised.
Well, when you said that the Pope's entourage, that the feeling of hate was palpable, hate of the Pope, you mean?
Yeah.
Hate of the Pope?
Yes, and this particular Pope. And this man, by the way, is not a Christian.
I beg your pardon?
He's not a Christian. He's a technocrat who goes to the Vatican for a certain reason periodically. And he says you can't mistake the hate and dislike of this man in his immediate entourage. And so John Paul II is a pathetic figure, really. He lives with this night and day. There is no mercy for him. There is no compassion for him in his normal entourage. And he is spurned by the Patriarch of Constantinople, and he's laughed at by the Patriarch of Moscow, and he's let down by his cardinals and his bishops. He's an outcast, this Pope, and it makes me cry to know what he's going through. And yet, he has done things which we must criticize, and will criticize, in all trust and belief that he is our Pope, but has made mistakes. Now, the point in general about these killings, the murder and the suicide in the Vatican is that my point was that it's in his watch this has taken place, and he knows it. He's a responsible man, and he knows that this has taken place during his watch, and that therefore, somehow or other, he is responsible. He is responsible.
Would you expect a statement from the Pope?
No.
No.
Oh, he might make a reference. Every Wednesday, as you know, when he's at all in good shape, he gives a little sermonette from the window, from one of the windows on the fourth floor of his apartment in the Apostolic Palace, out to the crowd. There always is a crowd on Wednesday to listen to him. He may make some general reference which people will pick up on as a reference to this calamity. Because, believe you me, Art, ecclesiastically, papally, this is a disaster. There's no doubt about it. And this is a sign of the times. I mean,
are we to know, will we know, Father Martin, when the Antichrist is with us?
Yes, we will. We have been given three signs by the Scripture, and confirmed by all doctrine and teaching for almost 1900 years. And it's very simple, Art. There's first of all the first sign, the major sign is this. In his day, I mean when he's active, because he's here already, but he's not active. But when he is active, there will be problems, human problems, confronting us as a race, as a society of nations. problems we can't solve. Our best, the best and the brightest of our technocrats and scientists and theorists and leaders will not be able to solve them. He will. That's the first thing. He will produce the solutions for them. And people will be so overwhelmed with gratitude and with relief that somebody has the solution which works, they will say to him, and the second sign is this, you must be divine. And the third sign is, he will say, kneel down and adore me. I am indeed your God. Then we have Antichrist.
You said he is here now. He is not yet active. I have heard this.
He's alive.
The Antichrist is now alive.
And he cannot die until Christ kills him. He has this pseudo-immortality. And don't ask me where, how, who, what.
How do we know that much? How do we know that?
From the second letter of Paul to the Thessalonians. If you read it carefully, those three signs are there. And the fathers of the church, the early writers between 100 A.D. and 600 A.D., they're the early writers. Two Gregories of Nyssa, Gregory of Nazianz, and St. Basil, all those who wrote Origen, the fathers of the church, the basic writers, they all agreed on the character and the signs of the Antichrist's appearance.
There are those, my listeners, many of whom believe that the signs are all around us now. The children, the blank-eyed killers, the soulless killers.
I know. That's
the killing of exorcists, the ritual murdering of exorcists, murder in the Vatican, just to name a few of the more recent within hours. But there are people who will say, these are signs that he is with us now.
Yes, there are signs that he is with us now, but the reign of Antichrist will be very, very signal, very clear. And the only source we have is that second letter of Paul to the Thessalonians and those three signs. And he has not yet started his operation.
Well, Father, I am not going to suggest that our president is the Antichrist. And there are many in my audience.
No, he's not. He's just a very naughty man.
Many who would. However, is it not reasonable to look at what the president is alleged to do on a fairly regular basis, and then look at the national poll of approval for this president, and make certain conclusions about the changed thinking and the acceptance level of what once would have been thought of surely as evil behavior by the American people. I mean, the acceptance of it.
Absolutely. But Art, you, more than me, more than most of us, would I'm sure, appreciate the fact that there is now a growing gap between what the spin doctors create as the public mentality and what people are really thinking. And only if we had... Do you remember the cube, Q-U-B-E. Do you remember that cube business? The instant reaction to the television?
I do, yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
Well, there's a very good reason why they would never install that. It was instantaneous, and it was done by computer, and if they put that in, and every one of the 240 million Americans, or roughly the adults amongst them anyway, were able to vote, I bet you the polls would be totally different about President Clinton and everything else.
Well, they might be. Father, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. My guest is the exorcist, Father Malachi Martin from New York City. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Casting to 20 states and 5 Canadian provinces with 50,000 watts of Twin Cities.
Disturbing night tonight. And it was intended that you be here this night, Father.
Well, Art, these things I heard the hesitancy in your voice when you spoke about coincidence, because in these things, I do not think there is any coincidence.
Yeah, I'm beginning to believe that myself.
There's a certain providence over things, and you and I originally were supposed to talk about 2 weeks ago, but we had to put that off for one reason or another, and we happened to latch on to tonight when these two things have come to a head, and other things have come to a head in the meantime, too.
Before we leave the subject of the Pope and what has occurred tonight, Dan in Chicago asks the following.
Yes.
Please, if you can, tell us who are the advisors, that's in quotes, that recommended the Pope was safe to mingle with the darkness that is voodoo. I know it sounds like I'm being suspicious, but I just don't think these actions would be entered into without counsel. This could easily be the result of being too trusting with those nearest to him.
That's right. That's right. He you see, the Pope has a theological commission of his own, 30 men usually. Some of them are not Catholic. Some of them don't even believe in God.
What?
Some of them certainly, you know, leave much to be desired as regards the practice of Catholicism as such. And then there's that factor, number one. Number two, in the immediate entourage of the Pope, if you look at the people he frequents with daily, there is no shining light that you say, gosh, that's a holy man, that's an observant man. That's somebody you can look to for principles, Catholic principles. There is nobody like that. Anybody like that who had power has had his wings shorn. Well shorn often. And I remember talking to one of them recently, face to face, and he said, look, as a cardinal, what can I do? I've been stripped of all power. I said, Your Eminence, you can die. You can give testimony with your blood. At which he was mute.
Certainly he was. What do you see for the future of the papacy? This man is frail. I don't know how long he will be with us. If there are hands manipulating what's occurring behind the scenes, what do you think comes next?
Well, I can have lurid thoughts, or I can have sort of pacifist thoughts. I know that he himself intends to, if that has any valency at all, he intends to live past the Y2K moment.
As a matter of fact, Father, he plans to go to Jerusalem, doesn't he?
I know. He plans that, and he goes to Sinai. He wants even to retrace the steps of Abraham, who came from a town called Ur of the Chaldees, now in Iraq. If possible. He may be restrained in that, because did you see the reason why the papal visit to Israel and the Middle East was put off?
Because of the problem, of course, with Jerusalem, is what they're suggesting.
No, the Vatican was very explicit about it.
Oh?
Yes, Toran, who is the sort of prime minister, if you want to put it, of the Vatican Secretary of State, said quite blatantly, the danger of war breaking out there is too much.
Well, it's another way of saying the same thing, yes. There's probably going to be a war over Jerusalem.
That's it. And over the whole question of the Palestinian state, because Netanyahu doesn't want a Palestinian state, and I quite understand why he doesn't. But I also understand why the Palestinians want a state. There are more of them than there are Israelis, by the way.
Does the Pope intend in that visit, if it is going to occur around the millennium, to try to bring together the three religions?
Art, his dream, and it's the only dream John Paul II has had. He never dreamt of controlling his bishops. He never dreamt of improving the condition of the religious orders. He never even dreamt of spreading Catholicism as a belief. His dream has always been to create a dynamic at the center of which would be Roman Catholics. Grouped around them would be the other Christian religions or sects or churches, Greeks and Russians, and Western Protestantism. And grouped around them would be the Jewish people. And grouped around them would be the Muslims. His dream was to make out of that a dynamic the world would have to respect. And it's his dream.
Is it your dream?
No. No.
What do you think
what's going to happen?
Will come to pass if he lives long enough and tries this?
What will happen will be that the institutional organization of the church, as distinct from the people who live the life of the church, the supernatural life of the church, that organization will cease to be the house of Christ.
You know,
that's a very dire prophecy.
Yes, it is. You know, it sure is sounding like there are a lot of people who are worried about the year 2000, about the millennium.
Sure. And not merely about the Y2K aspect.
And that's exactly right. And there may be, I'm beginning to discern, good cause to be worried about it.
There is very good cause to be concerned about it. Art, I'll tell you, it is now what? The 4th or the 5th, isn't it?
It's now the 5th, most time zones.
1998, and it's on your show. If I'm alive, I'll be then 79 and well, and we are talking, it will be a totally changed international scene and a very changed USA. And I'm willing to make a modest bet of $5 with you on that about a very serious matter. And it will be the end of the papacy as we know it, and of the institutional organization as we know it. There will be an underground church, which there exists already.
Most endings are the beginning of something else.
So true. That's one of the truest historical statements you've ever made. And the comparison, please do not take this as outlandish. The comparison is Christ himself, the man, Jesus Christ, who is a very big man, according to the Shroud of Turin, and I firmly believe in that. But anyway, he was a big man, and he was crucified, and he was bled like a pig, and he died. And that body ceased to be animate. It ceased to exist and had to be put in the earth, because like everybody, it was going to smell. And 3 days later, according to his followers, according to me, according to believers, he was alive and well in a glorified body. And it was really him.
Yes.
It was he. Redi vivus, as they say in Latin. Alive again, and with the marks of his wounds, but totally healed, and he was glorified. He couldn't suffer anymore. And I think that that's what the Roman Catholic Church is going to go through. Crucifixion.
Resurrection.
Death and resurrection and glorification. But in the meantime, we have to go through the agony in the garden and the Via Dolorosa. It isn't pleasant to think about.
I was at the very place in Bethlehem where Christ was born. They mark it. When you were there, when you were standing right in front of that spot, you know whether you're a religious person or not.
True.
You know. You know, Art.
You know. Something inside in you and everything around you tells you that.
Yes.
It's extraordinary. You recall my moment of truth there, too.
Father... Oh, here's a question from a listener. I want to try to get some of them in.
Yes.
Here's somebody who asks from Tucson, if there are demonic possessions, are there ever angelic possessions? What an interesting question. There are?
Of course there are. I know people, not many, but I know people, and I call them up in some crisis and say, by the way, such and such is needed in such and such a place. They'll say, oh, well, there's help on the way. And they've talked with their angel. And they live with them. And it's extraordinary. It covers the whole gamut, from young teenage girls to grown men in responsible places in government and in science and the professions, to old people, to little children. It runs the gamut. Yes, there are. Because the thrill of the demonic, there's always that. I keep that, using that word, because that's what attracts its adherence. Outweighs the angel. And then we have a show, there's a series of picture of films on television about the angels. And, of course, it's a travesty of what an angel really is. And angelic behavior and appointments are treated like, I don't know, in a very, very non-angelic way.
Is there a war going on?
Yes, there is. There's a war every day. And whether you like it or not, we are all in it. And it starts in your heart. And it's with your hands and your feet and your body and your sexuality and your mind. And it's with everybody you meet.
I would like to read for you, Father, something sent by Dr. Richard Boylan. And it is on the Internet. Worldwide right now. Monsignor Balducci, Vatican theologian, insider close to the Pope, has gone on national Italian television 5 times in recent months to proclaim that extraterrestrial contact is a real phenomenon. He announced that the Vatican is receiving much information about extraterrestrials and their contacts with humans from its embassies in various countries such as Mexico, Chile, Venezuela, and more. Monsignor Balducci said that he is on a Vatican commission looking into extraterrestrial encounters and how to cope with the emerging general realization of extraterrestrial contact. He provided the Catholic Church's analysis of extraterrestrials, emphasizing that extraterrestrial encounters, quote, are not, in capitals, demonic, and are not due to psychological impairment, and are not a case of entity attachment, but these encounters deserve to be studied carefully, end quote. What can you tell me about this?
Well, Monsignore Corrado Balducci is now, I think he may be my age, in the 70s.
Yes, sir.
I think, what I can find out. He's not a blowhard. You know, he's not a publicity seeker.
Mm-hmm.
But the subject he discusses, and we're discussing now, and we'll be discussing this for quite a while out, especially in the light of things that will happen in the next year, we're discussing a subject which is so volatile, it's really the source.
Oh, you hit a touchstone there, Father.
With my ear, I'm sorry. pardon me, and everybody listening, please pardon me. It's a volatile subject, like nitroglycerin. It's ready to explode, because here's the central nub which Corrado Balducci and everybody faces, is this. Until the relevant governments, and I realize I'm walking on thin ice here.
Thin ice, indeed.
A thin ice of security. Security. National security and international security.
Yes.
So I've got to be very careful. And Corrado Balducci, I hope he should be careful too. Until the relevant governments, and it's not merely the government of the U.S., but other governments, are willing to put in public the facts about what they consider extraterrestrial activity, it is impossible to make sensible statements that make sense, statements that make sense. And until they do, we're in the dark, really, as regards the general public. We haven't got this scientifically controllable facts. And I don't think we're going to have them very soon.
We have discussed this before, Father, but there is no question. The Vatican has astronomical observatories all over the place. One on Mount Graham, for example, that somehow the Vatican applied every bit of pressure that it had and blew by all the environmental concerns and got that facility in place. And the question, just the good, simple, flat-out question, is what would the Vatican be looking for in space, Father?
Well, as you know, the central doctrine taught by the Church is that Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, was the Son of God. He died for all men, all rational beings. And hitherto, in the thinking of Christianity, this has been confined to the human race. Now, Balducci, rightly, points to phrases of Christ, of Jesus, that we pass over too easily. When he appeared to them after the resurrection, he said, fear not, it is I. All power has been given to me on earth and in the skies. And while Balducci knows that, as far as he can make out from the little details, the sparse details revealed by the relevant governments, that if there is any rational activity, technologically advanced beings, they're not in our galaxy. They're transgalactic. Mm-hmm. But we don't know. We have no concrete evidence. And it's like everything else, until we get concrete evidence given to us that we can touch and see and hear and measure, we're in the dark. But, of course, the Vatican is absolutely riveted by the possibility that there are rational beings, not necessarily human beings, outside in a transgalactic position, but we don't know. So the great temporary proviso is to say we don't know. We suspect. We think. Certainly, you see, in the time of Columbus, when he set out with those three ships to go to the Indies, one of the revolts, one of the mutinies he underwent was that the sailors believed, once they passed a certain point, that the nails holding the ship's planks would fall apart.
That's right.
It would disintegrate.
Right.
And they also had, we now know, the medieval myths about the men in Tibet, the three-headed men and the four-headed lions and the five-tailed, five-foot dogs, etc., which were all mythical creatures. And so a lot of people are inclined to say, now all this blather, all this talk about extraterrestrials is really, it's tricks of the demon. No, that's not rational thinking at all.
You're saying it is rational to conclude there is life out there, and obviously that's why they're looking for it?
It is rational to say that there is such secrecy about what is known by authoritative government centers that we have to wait and see.
All right, Father, hold it right there.
Sure.
Good long break. We'll be back from the high desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Spring and December now at America.
Obviously is paying close attention.
Very,
to space.
Very close attention.
Very close attention. And they are looking, I suspect, for something other than the rings around
Saturn. Yes.
Yes.
No. Look, Art, put it like this. If, perchance, I say now, it's an if, it's a hypothesis. All right, Art? So that, because it's a very ominous statement. If the relevant governments, I stress this fact, the relevant governments, were to submit to worldwide inspection and knowledge any facts proving the existence of rational beings, not necessarily humans,
mm-hmm.
of rational beings outside our galaxy. This would be a crisis for the Roman Catholic Church like no other crisis in its 2,000-year history.
I have always presumed that myself, Father.
It would be a crisis of gigantic proportions. Look, let me give you a shadowy parallel to it. When Columbus did get to the Indies, namely get to the New World, and he brought back the news, and things had to go slowly in those days, carrier pigeons couldn't do it, and they had no telegraphs, but when they came back to Europe, that there had been millions, but millions of human beings who never heard of the gospel, who never heard of Calvary, or of Jesus, or of the church. Theologians were stumped in the beginning. And they started a discussion, which is still going on, by the way, which in Latin was always called De Salute Gentium, about the salvation of the peoples outside the church, outside of Europe, which was considered to be totally Christianized. As St. Thomas himself, for instance, says that it's possible that Homo Silvestris, a man living in a forest in Dalmatia, possibly hadn't heard of the church, but all human beings had heard of the church. And suddenly they find out there have been millions, perhaps billions, of human beings that never heard about the church, and were never baptized.
Yes.
The crisis was huge in theology and started a whole new thought in Christian theology, which is still going on. Now, if we find out there are beings, not necessarily human again, technologically advanced, beyond where we are.
And they don't come down already knowing of the Word of God.
They don't know a thing about it. Have they got souls? You know, were they saved by Christ? Must we convert them? Must we preach the gospel? Must we explain the Bible to them? We don't know. And the churches, church men are totally unprepared for it. They're too busy fooling around with Enneagrams and a lot of garbage of that kind. But serious theology, and remark, Art, it is I who say it, and I'm paid to know it. In the church today, in the Roman Catholic Church, there is no dominant school of philosophy or theology worthy of the name. There is no theological development, no philosophical development. Just a potpourri of modernism and of phenomenology.
Well, let me give you something that might fit right into that category.
Mm.
I interviewed a brilliant man,
mm-hmm.
A week ago, I think, two weeks ago. His name is Matthew Alper.
Matthew Alper.
Alper, A-L-P-E-R.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote a book called The God Part of the Brain. And it is his contention that mortal beings, we are here for 70, 80, 90, 100 years, not long, that our brain, in defense of the entire concept of death, the brain actually developed in its own defense what he calls the God part of the brain, which compels those who are very much afraid of death to believe in something, to believe in anything, that even when you go and you examine the tribes that have not been touched by humanity, if it isn't God, they do worship something, and it is his contention that it is a natural part of evolution. And I can, so that's about the best I can do in explaining his position, but it was well articulated, and I would assume you would put it into the category you were just describing.
Yes. I, being a Roman Catholic, I firmly believe that without divine grace, which is not at all produced by anything human, by any endocrinological development, or by any neurological development in man, in a human being, but it's totally gratuitous from beyond the stars and beyond this visible cosmos, and straight from the heart of God to people he has said he loves so much that he sent his son to be with them, to be one of them. I believe that is that's the Roman Catholic position on the whole point. And while there's no doubt about it that if one adopts the theory of evolution to some degree, it's so rickety nowadays that one is inclined to sort of stand back from it, like a bag of bones that suddenly is collapsing. But really, between you and me and the Holy Ghost Spirit, but if in the evolutionary mentality, as a hypothesis, because it's only that and still remains that, then I suppose we could talk about neurological and endocrinological developments from primitive man down to the present moment. But there is that chasm, Art, that chasm between me and the divinity, which is utterly unknowable and awesome. And I can never have it, and I desire it. I see its reflection in the beauty of this world, of beautiful people and beautiful things. But I can't have it of myself. I have no power. I must depend on this God bending down in the midnight of my human misery and saying, I lift you up to my level because I love you. That's the Christian message. And doubtless there have been evolutionary trends, although sometimes I come from Ireland, you know, and sometimes I must say, because I can being Irish, I can say the following. Some of the people I used to know in Ireland certainly seem to have missed out on evolution of the brain to a certain degree.
All right.
But nobody else but an Irishman could say that about Irish people.
That's
otherwise
exactly
it'd be a revolution.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Let's take some phone calls.
Sure.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hi.
Hello, this is Michael in Lincoln, Nebraska. I have a question for you, Father.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. Thank you. There was a big controversy a while back. It was in the magazines and stuff about the Pope coming out and saying that Mary is co-redemptor with Christ.
Yes, he's not going to do that.
Now, I was going to ask you, what is your personal opinion? Do you think that Mary is co-redemptor with Christ?
No. I don't think Christ is the sole redeemer.
Okay.
But the position she occupied during his life, and the position she's occupied amongst Catholics anyway since then, and in early Christianity until the Lutheran Revolution, or revolt, I should say, really, in the 16th century, was that through her you reached her son. It's very easy, once you know the mother, to get the son to do things. But that he is the sole redemptor. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, now you're saying if you get to know the mother, then you'll get to know him. So are you saying that if we pray to Mary, Mary and the saints can answer our prayers?
Oh, yes, they can. Of course
okay.
They can. That's why, for instance...
In my Bible it says that there's only one mediator between God and man, and that is...
That's right. That's Christ, and he's the mediator. He mediated between Mary and God with the grace she got. She wouldn't have a thing except for him.
Okay.
But once she's been installed, she's a powerful lady.
Okay, now, is that what the Catholic Bible says?
That's what the Catholic Church says. See, Michael... For Catholics, the Bible is not the sole source of revelation. Bible is one, tradition is another.
Tradition
and the teaching
is a,
of the Church is a third.
Tradition is a source of revelation?
Yeah, source of revelation. You see, the Catholics hold that every apostle, until the death of the last apostle, there was a continual revelation going on, which is not confined to books. It went into tradition, to actions, to customs, started by the apostles all over the then known world. And those, you see, the Bible nowhere says that the Bible is the only source of revelation. It's an extraordinary embarrassing thing to fling at non-Catholics, but the Bible nowhere says I am the sole source of revelation. Nowhere says it. That was an assumption made by the Protestant revolt.
He's got a good point, doesn't he?
I mean, but the Bible says that the word... The written word, the Logos, is God.
Well, the Logos in that case is Christ.
Yes.
Logos, he is the word. And what we mean by that, at least Catholics mean by it, is that Christ is God's expression of himself. Because, see, Michael, in God in himself is unknowable. I can never know God in himself. I can only know him in Christ.
Yes,
he's the Logos. He's the word, the verbum.
Right.
He's
the mediator.
Yes, he is everything, and he's the only friend we have in time and in eternity, you know. He's the only one who finally can give me light and give me consolation and finally give me immortal life, which I yearn for and I lust after, but I can't get by my own self.
Right.
All right, caller, thank you very much. Father.
Yes.
You are familiar with the current science of cloning, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
There are many, many, many scientists who are now saying that they have cloned Dolly, they have cloned other animals.
And I'm sure they're cloning people. I'm sure.
Are you aware that there is, there are stories now suggesting that blood has been recovered from the Shroud of Turin?
Yes, I know they say that. I don't know. I want to ask Captain Jackson, isn't that his name? Is the Army, the Air Force man who has gone into all that. I should talk with him one of these days. They say they have recovered that blood.
Yes. With blood, there would be DNA.
Obviously.
With DNA, there would be the possibility of cloning. And while it might be an unusual way to consider the second coming of Christ...
Yes, I get you. I get the picture. Yes.
They're talking of it, Father.
They are. Well, there's one difficulty in the way, Art, and it's this, for me anyway. It's this, that even twins, identical twins,
mm-hmm.
with all these similarities and common instincts,
mm-hmm.
they're distinct personalities. They're always distinct. And there's a marvelous study of twins that were separated at birth and then brought together in adult life.
Yes.
Which brings out this very clearly, that there is a common, they have a common heredity.
Yes.
They marry the same type of woman.
Yes.
They're bald in the same way.
Yes.
Their pubic hair is the same, and their height and girth and their inclinations. But they have distinct personalities. They're very distinct personae. And the wife of one twin couldn't be attached to his twin.
But is it not possible to imagine... that with the miracles that Christ performed,
yes,
if they get intact DNA, they will discover a difference in the DNA of Christ.
I'm sure. I'm sure they will find a distinction, a difference. I'm sure they will, because...
Wouldn't it kind of be the final irony, Father, if the scientists were the ones to propagate the second coming?
It would. But it does a... It seems to be highly improbable to me, but mentally, logically, scientifically, apart from revelation and the unicity of Christ, I must say yes. From that perspective, it seems possible. From the point of view of revelation and Christ's unicity, his unique position, it will never take place. But that's where faith steps in.
Well, there may be surprises that lay ahead.
There may well be. And the church men have to face them, and that's why there's a general closure, or really lip sealing, lip zipping amongst responsible churchmen in Rome and elsewhere about transgalactic beings. But they won't take refuge in saying that it's demonic playthings. It's the devil playing with our senses to deceive us.
Yes, they seem to be moving away from that.
Yes, anyway, it's not sensible because, by the way, in the whole history of demonology and Luciferian interference with human beings, there's no parallel to that, except unless you go to Goethe's Faust, in which you have his descriptions of the witches' Sabbath on their brooms, you know, but that's all fantasy.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, where are you?
This is Zip from Juneau, and I have two quick questions for your guest.
Oh, Juneau, Alaska, the wet capital of Alaska. Yes, sir.
It does rain here quite a bit.
Well, rain, we're all... By the way, we're 79% water, and the rest is love. So don't run down water.
Well, I'm not going to call to talk about Bible or beliefs. I know where you stand on that, and I've accepted Christ in my heart, and I know when I die, I know where I'm going. So what I wanted to ask you, sir, was Have you ever considered that UFOs might be the mythology of the 20th century, seeing how each civilization, when it's reached its pinnacle before it fell, it always had created its belief system around its technology? And since our God is our technology, wouldn't it be, you know, just same to assume that we would create gods and its messengers and the image of technology?
Yes, I have thought of it as that. But in that I put the Star Trek series, you know, and a lot of the science fiction, that it is a created mythology based on our technological advances, yes, as a mythology. But jeepers weepers, pardon my language, Art, what a poor mythology compared to Greek and Roman and Indian mythology. You know, the richness of that mythology, the lessons for human beings, even in the myths of the Greek gods and legends, there are such lessons about human moral behavior and human human behavior as such. But in Star Trek or in such productions, it's sort of a dry dust mythology that has none of the old moralizing, and I love the word moralizing, and I love moralizing tales. It is none of that, and therefore I haven't got much attraction to it, but I agree with you. It is a mythology created by our technology.
Huh. All right. We don't have a lot of time. First time caller line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
This is Ron from Minnesota.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Father Martin. I had a question. You said that you believe that the Antichrist is alive in the world today.
Yes,
and
I do.
And I also believe this. I was wondering what your view on the rapture of the church is.
All right. Father?
Well, there's no... In the Catholic tradition about the Bible, the rapture and all that is overshadowed by the normal belief of the church for 1900 years that at one particular moment there's going to be a great assemblage in the presence of Christ of all men and women who have ever lived and are living, and there will be the general judgment and the particular judgment and the condemnation of the wicked to hell and the leading of the just to heaven forever.
Father, on that note, hold on. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning. Art, Father Martin talked of persons perfectly possessed by the devil.
Yes.
You can ignore this question, Father, if you wish. In the opinion of Father Martin, is Bill Clinton perfectly possessed?
No comment.
I had a feeling that you might say that. All right, let's go back to the lines. First time caller line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin.
Hello.
Hello there.
Yes, this is Annie from Valencia, California.
Yes, Annie.
Father, I have a couple of questions for you. The first one being, do you know Dr. Charles Stinson?
Dr. Charles whom?
Stinson.
Stinson? No, I don't.
Out of Dartmouth?
No, I don't, ma'am.
Okay. Another question I had was, I understand that you were a former Jesuit.
That's right, I was for 25 years.
And what order are you in now?
I'm not in any order. I belong to a bishop, and I write books and go on radio and TV.
Right. Okay.
And that's when I'm 77, retired in that sense, but not retired in the active sense.
Right. You're still a priest.
Oh, I say mass every day.
Right. Okay. I had another question that I had thought of, and I wondered if you could shed a little light on this. The underground city.
The underground church or the underground?
No, city. The underground city in or near Rome.
Are you referring to the catacombs below the Vatican?
No, I'm talking about an underground city that is actually in place now for the New World Order. Many of the Japanese and the Chinese and many of the European countries have started their... It's underground, and it's near Rome, Yeah, but it's not...
Annie, you have the advantage. I don't know anything about it.
I don't know a thing about it either.
Tell me.
No, I guess we're going to have to wonder. She's already gone, but I've never heard anything about it. Here is a criticism, Father.
Yes.
Let me read it to you.
Sure.
Aren't you and your guest's comments are pointing out what most true Christians know to be the inherent blasphemous nature of the Catholic religion?
Mm-hmm.
Your guest himself made a blasphemous statement when he said that Jesus was, quote, bled like a pig, end quote. Excuse me, and he better ask God to excuse him, too. Jesus was bled like a lamb. Anyone at all familiar with the scripture knows. I think he should make an on-air apology.
Well, I will make an apology if it hurt the sensibility of anybody. We don't bleed lambs, actually. We do bleed pigs. And I wasn't comparing Jesus to a pig, either. And that's it, taken like that, it is very offensive, and I apologize without any difficulty, and I won't use it again, since I've offended at least one other person on the face of the earth with that phrase. And I see that it could be taken indelicately, and I apologize very much, because I venerate the Lord Jesus as my Savior.
Well, I'm sure the intent was not negative, and I understand what you're saying.
Precisely. Well, I apologize. I sincerely apologize, and I take correction on that point.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you, sir?
Really? This is Ron in Los Angeles.
Hi, Ron. You're going to have to yell at us a little. You're not too strong.
Sorry.
Oh, that's right. Go ahead.
Morning. Good morning, Father Malachi.
Good morning to you, Ron. What's on your mind?
I have a question about one of the Trinity, the Holy Ghost.
Yes.
Never explained to me. And I have a paradox for you. You said, look to the sky.
Yes, that was in one particular period of last year.
Last year, 97, Christmas Eve, Christmas night, a halo in the sky.
That's right. Well, no, it was a period from the beginning of spring from the end of winter to the end of spring.
Mm-hmm.
There was a possibility that there would be some sign in the skies. There wasn't.
Yeah, I saw a halo.
Yes, there was, Christmas but Eve. It wasn't the sign I was looking for.
You were looking for
it? Yeah.
Does the color of the halo make any difference?
I don't think so. The sign I'm looking for is not of that kind.
Would have been unmistakable.
Unmistakable.
Well, that's my paradox. What was it?
Well, Ron, I'd rather wait until we will see it, because it will be in the skies
mm-hmm.
in these years. But it hasn't come yet.
Okay.
We will know it when we see it, unmistakably.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hi.
Hi, this is Charles in Tampa.
Hi, Charles.
I'd like to ask the Father, given that God is so incomprehensible, if he doesn't think that each culture will come up with a name and a mythology and a symbol set around God by its own cultural metaphors, and thus any other culture that we meet will know God, but by a different name.
Yes, if I understand the question, here's what I would say to it. Charles, is that the name?
Yes.
That he is unknowable in himself, but he has taken trouble to reveal himself. And as Jesus said, who sees me sees the Father. Who knows me knows the Father. And that's the only way we can know God, but we can know him in Christ. And whatever variation each culture puts on that, beginning with the color of the skin, because there are black Christs,
right.
There are yellow Christ statues,
mm-hmm.
And there are Occidental-looking Christs and Chinese-looking Christs, you know.
Yes.
That cultural variation is only a human way of talking about one and the same person. And when we finally look on his face, we will find that he's unique to himself.
Well, of course, when you explain something to a child, you use metaphor because you're explaining something beyond his comprehension.
That's right. That's right. It's a very simple thing. It's a question of pedagogy. But I'm sure the reality of Christ is stunning and will entail every trait of beauty that...
Call toll-free 1-800-618-8255.
...than that. But we have got to wait until we see him in heaven, please God, before we know that.
Thank you very much, sir.
The cultural difference doesn't make a difference.
All right, thank you, caller, and take care. Dear Art, Father Martin has made several references to a different government in the United States in the coming years or so. Can he explain what he refers to?
Well, here's what I mean. I think that the tendency, in spite of the Congress, by the way, the recalcitrance of our Congress, I think that the whole concept of national sovereignty is changing, and that laws will have to be passed, will have to be observed and accepted in states not made by Americans, but made by greater bodies to which we will be bound by treaty and pact and agreement, number one. Number two, you and I, Art, have made various references tonight to the Y2K problem.
Yes.
It's coming on us. Apparently, according to authorities just published, the two departments of government in the United States who will not be ready for Y2K are the Department of Defense and the Department of Transport. But it does mean, and then some big authority, not Greenspan, but somebody of that stature has suggested mm-hmm. that we should declare 3 months worldwide recession because we won't be ready for it. We simply will not have converted the chips to cope with anything beyond 2000.
This is what I am told by every single person
who
understands.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, but they don't want to frighten people. Therefore, I'm sure there's going to be something resembling martial law in some form or other. If there's that disruption of supplies, supplies of fuel, electricity, water, food.
So people should prepare with the basics.
They should, but the point I'm making, that's true. But the point I'm making is that we will be constrained by laws that change the face of America, at least for a while, and we may never go back. In fact, you can read spiritual writers writing currently, who say this is a lovely, neat trick to impose Big Brother on us all.
Sure.
You know, you can suspect all sorts of conspiracies. But de facto, we are now walking into an era when anything can be disrupted. I must tell you one thing, Art, apropos of this, if I could take just 1 minute.
Yes, sir.
I went to the Emporium about 2 months ago to buy some food, and on that day, down, it's the Emporium here on 3rd Avenue, where I go, and it's in the basement, and the lines were all crowded, and all the women were, the tellers were dispensing their money, and the et cetera, people were walking out with their food, and there were lines, and there always are lines, and suddenly the electricity died out, and no computer worked.
Yes.
And we stood in mute silence, paralyzed. We couldn't get our money. They couldn't take our money. We couldn't get our food. We didn't want to go. We had already taken our supplies in the usual little carts they give us. But it was a symbol of what can happen when the juice stops. It was very frightening.
There was a movie that I recently saw, which I just at this moment cannot recall the title of. But it was about exactly that scenario. The power went off. And the power stayed off. And in the first little bit of the time, everything was relatively normal. People got candles.
That's right.
But very shortly, the food stopped. The sales stopped.
Tempers frayed.
Cars stopped.
Yep.
People began running out of gas.
That's right.
It turned into absolute anarchy, murderous, I might add, anarchy, very quickly.
And there had to be martial law.
Well, where possible. Now, we are a nation of 260 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the only thing that allows law and order to reign is the basic respect of the massive number of people.
That's right.
For the law. And if enough of them turned against the law, there could be no law enforcement. There would be no law enforcement. There would be anarchy.
There will be chaos and anarchy. There's no doubt about it.
If you ever get a chance, my wife just handed it to me. It was called The Trigger Effect.
The Trigger Effect?
Yes, and it was about exactly what you were just discussing.
Is it a book?
It is a movie.
Oh, I see.
It is a movie. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Hello. This is Ron from Vancouver.
Hi, Ron.
And, hi. And I'd just like to say it's an honor talking to you, Father. The very first time you came on, I forget when it was, if months ago, was the very first time I started listening to Art Bell. And I've been an Art Bell fan ever since.
Good. Thank you.
Yes.
Very good.
And I was wondering, this business about the cloning, I really don't think there would, if they would clone, it wouldn't really matter. Because wasn't Christ Truth's power spiritual, and didn't it indeed come from God Himself?
Well, yes. Christ was God, is God.
Yes.
Being the Son of God.
He's the God's Word.
Yeah, it would be. That's why I said to Art that theoretically it sounds possible. Practically speaking, he couldn't be cloned.
Well, you know, why would all the
unless God chose that as the method, Now, I just thought, sort of idly, what a great joke on the scientists, but
yeah, it would be. The only thing is that the Revelation, which we're supposed to accept, and we do accept, says that Christ Himself, the historical figure Christ, will return in His entirety on the last day for the final judgment. And not a clone, but Himself, with that body and that blood and that divinity, which we receive in Holy Communion.
Have you given much thought to how far off that day is?
Yes, I have. And I don't use the word far.
I mean, we meet on a night when there is news of an exorcist brutally murdered, when there's news of murders and suicides in the Vatican, and
yes,
things that are just virtually unthinkable, would have been unthinkable.
I know.
These seem to be signs pointing towards something.
Of course they are, and the behavior of what we call El Nino is part and parcel of it all, and the earthquake in Japan, 7 point something, is
7.7, Father.
What's that?
7.7.
7.7, yes. I consider that to be a part of the signs. But we, as usual, we're going to wait until it hits over the head.
Father, would you be surprised to know that I have a very good friend in Australia,
yes,
who watches the U.S. Naval satellite maps of ocean temperatures,
yes,
very carefully, and 6 months or even better, before this El Nino began to build, he told us it was coming. Now, the El Nino has just started to lessen, and I just spoke with him, and he said, guess what? There's off the coast of Japan now even bigger heating going on, indicating to him that there may be a larger El Nino building for this coming year.
My Lord, that is very, very, I'm going to retain that fact. I'm going to retain that fact. It's significant.
Well, there are undeniable changes going on. A 75-square-mile portion of the Larsen B ice shelf just broke off. Scientists, are saying that the entire ice shelf is now critically unstable, and they expect the entire thing to fall off shortly.
Is this the Arctic Circle?
Antarctic.
Huh.
The Antarctic.
But that is very interesting. At least I find it very relevant and interesting. I think that all of us, without going to extremes, we all have a feeling that something huge
is coming,
is developing and coming. We don't know what it is. We're being sensible about it. You know, we're not getting hysterical. But there is something happening, there's no doubt about it.
No, you live one day at a time, of course.
You do.
And life goes on, but there is this building feeling of imminent change.
Right. There's no doubt about it. And it's a malaise, really, deep down inside us. It's a malaise. It's an uneasy, queasy feeling that we're sensing something which we can't name, and we're undergoing a change, and we don't know into what. We know what we were. We don't know where we're going.
Yes. An ending and a beginning.
That's right. It's a historic time to be alive and to be conscious. But when I think of my ancestors, my near ancestors, my father and mother, who were married in 1909 and who grew up in the Victorian era, my God.
Yes.
Tranquility and the peacefulness and the unsurprised behavior of their world, you know.
Father, I have kept you up very late. I have one last hour of the program, as usual, which you are welcome to, or you may slip into the arms of Morpheus and grab some sleep. It's your choice at this point.
Yes.
What would you like to do?
Oh, I will go on.
You will go on.
I will go on.
Well, my lines are going crazy, so a lot of people want to talk to you. What I'll try to do is devote the last hour as much as possible to the phones.
Okay. Okay.
All right, very good. My guest is Father Malachi Martin from New York City. If you have questions for him, we will devote this, the bulk of this last hour to your questions. It is indeed a strange, unnerving night. Very, very, very unnerving. A double murder and suicide in the Vatican. A priest performing exorcisms, themselves murdered brutally, satanically. Strange times, wouldn't you admit, folks? From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
I love doing. I really love doing. And as long as I make sense, keep me on. Cut me off when I stop making sense.
Uh-huh. By the way, you sound so very good. Bob Crane, we had Bob Crane send you a telephone. And
I know I got that lovely telephone. It's installed. I'm speaking on it.
What a difference it makes. All right. Listen to this. Hi, Art. Please tell Father Malachi Martin, this is from a programmer in Arizona, that the Y2K problem is all too real. No hoax. It's every bit as serious as he believes it is. If the problems had begun to be addressed in the last few years, there might have been hope. Now, it's too late. Prepare, Art. There is no better preparation than faith in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
From a programmer in Arizona.
It's very realistic.
And very, realistic. Very soon as well.
Oh, yes, it's around the corner, Art.
All right, this as well. Please ask the Father to tell us anything he can, or he's willing to, about the prophecy of Fatima.
Well, the prophecy of Fatima, without going into my background in this matter, the prophecy of Fatima is not a pleasant document to read. It's not pleasant news. It implies. It doesn't make any sense unless we accept that there will be, or that there is in progress, a wholesale apostasy amongst clerics and laity in the Catholic Church. That the institutional organization of the Roman Catholic Church, that is the organization of parishes, dioceses, archbishops and bishops and cardinals and the Roman bureaucracies and the chanceries throughout the world, unless that is totally disrupted and rendered null and void, the third secret makes no sense. And number two, the other salient characteristic about it is that it means intense suffering.
I don't know what the
believers.
I don't know what the third secret is, Father.
The third secret, Lucia, Sister Lucia, who's still alive, the only surviving child of the three Fatima children. She's 89 now. She lives in Coimbra, in the Carmelite convent in Spain. she was prevailed upon by her bishop to write down the third secret. Already conveyed two secrets to the children. We know the first two, but the third secret, Lucia, since she was the only survivor, refused to tell anybody. And finally the bishop said, look, we're all getting on in age, sister, write it down, and we'll send it over to the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, it's not destined for the Pope, it's destined for the people. Well, he said, the Pope will tell the people about it. So she wrote it down, and this is in the 30s, and then in the 50s it was conveyed over to Rome to Pius the 12th, Pope Pius the 12th, and Cardinal Ottaviani, who was the head of the Holy Office of that time. They put it away because Lucia said that it shouldn't be opened except by the Pope in 1960, because the thing would be clear then. So it was opened by John the 23rd in February 1960, and he proceeded to say that it wasn't true. It was unreliable. And the children didn't know what they were talking about. And Lucia didn't, because when she got this supposed secret from the Virgin, she was illiterate, and she was under 10 years old. So she couldn't know what she was talking about. And John 23rd, then in his opening speech at the Vatican Council on October 11, 1962, referred contemptuously to the three children as prophets of doom, and said, we today don't have anything to do with these prophets of doom, because we are in a different age. And so he suppressed the secret.
And it remains so today?
It remains so today. And it's Paul VI read it, Pope Paul VI, and did nothing about it. John Paul I read it and did nothing about it, but he only lived for 34 years as Pope. And John Paul II has read it twice and has done nothing about it. He has spoken about it in public, but he has done nothing about it. And that's the status of the secret today.
Do you know what it is?
Yes, but I'm under oath.
Do you consider it to be the ravings of a illiterate child?
No. It's a very exact description of what is now happening and apparently what is going to happen shortly, but in cold, hard terms. There's no exaggeration. There's no use of adjectives or adverbs or anything like that. It's a blanket statement. A very factual thing stated baldly, with no adulteration, no flourishes, no purple patches.
In other words, they got exactly what they asked for.
Yeah, it's a frightening document. It's very frightening.
All right, I promise to go to the lines. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Ron from Vancouver again.
Hello, Ron.
Hello.
Oh, you were on earlier, Ron?
Yes, I was.
You're only allowed one call per show, my friend.
Well, can you ask the question that I asked?
What question
you?
Is that?
Is the sign in the sky that Father is supposed to see, is that a sign of a cross?
Well, I think you're not going to get your answer. At least if I read his comments earlier, you will know it when you see it. In the meantime, relax.
Uh-huh.
First-time caller line? Yeah, there you are. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Yes, this is Eric in Houston.
Hello, Eric.
Yes, one quick comment and then a question.
Yes,
and in addition to the mount, I don't want to seem flip about it, but the mounting body count, let's not forget the archbishop down in Guatemala that was assassinated.
Oh, yes, let's not forget that. You're quite right.
And the other thing I have to say is you've spoken, very early on, you spoke about a secularizing tendency in the Vatican, and I'm just wondering if you're not looking at the past through sepia-colored glasses.
Yeah.
Leaving aside the Borgia popes and all that. I mean, in the last 100 years, there was a sort of up until very recently, kind of a cozy relationship in with the church in Italy and the mafia. Mm-hmm. You had the relationship with the Vatican and Mussolini that established mm-hmm. the Vatican State in 1929. And then you had the fact of the Vatican accused of running Nazi war criminals on their way through to South America.
Yes, yes.
Would you care to comment?
Well, you have sort of listed a series of deficiencies of Vatican officials in the last 30, 40, 50 years, although I would not characterize the relationship between Mussolini and the Vatican as in any terms loving. They hated each other. But they both profited. Mussolini wants the support of the Vatican. He was afraid the people would revolt against him. He wanted its approval. And the Vatican wanted to break out of its closure and get its own sovereign state, which it got in 1929 only through Mussolini. So, but with that restriction, though, sure, there were churchmen who provided the rat lines for the escaping Nazis. There's no doubt about that.
How could that possibly have been justified?
It wasn't justified by money and ambition and stupidity and evil. And nobody's justifying it today at all.
How then, Father, does that separate the Vatican then or now from whatever else goes on in the world that we decry and worry so about?
Well, it's something which we hope will never happen again. There's no excuse for it. At all, none whatever. And I'm the first person to say it was wrong, wrong, wrong. And that there's no excuse for it. It was a bad mistake by churchmen bent ideologically and not with any love of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no excuse for that. Now, secularization I'm talking about, though, is where the behavior of Vatican officials doesn't differ from the behavior of the Dalai Lama. Or the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Hmm.
Or the Protestant monks of Taizé. And indeed, there is a great assimilation taking place. And
yes.
That is secularization. Besides, the Pope appearing on the same stage as Bob Dylan, you know, okay,
yes.
But it's a funny situation.
It's funny, funny.
It's funny.
Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Thanks for holding me over here.
All right, you're going to have to kind of yell at us. You're not too loud. Where are you?
Okay, my name is Brad, and I'm in Paulsboro, Washington.
All right.
Brad, what's on your mind?
Hi, Father Malachi.
Hi.
Well, bear with an amenity. You've been a hero for, since 1974.
Thank you very much. It's a very nice thing for a poor old guy like me to hear. You must admit, Art.
Indeed.
Well, now to my question. I consider myself to be something of a seeker, and in recent years I've kind of stumbled across something. I've read through another scholar by the name of Zachariah Sitchin.
Yes.
And he became such a center of attention for me that I went to the trouble of trying to learn some of these languages myself so I could read it in the original.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that I found reminded me a lot of what I was seeing in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And am I practicing something that is akin to apostasy here, or what's going on with this? Am I seeing what I think I'm seeing, or is there a connection here?
You must tell us what you're seeing.
Well, I see the story of Abraham being told, but in a different way. Father Abraham, and I see it being told from the viewpoint of someone who is being visited by something that may or may not be of this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And treating with it as if it is a living thing.
Mm-hmm.
And It causes me concern on the one hand, but on the other hand, as it is something that is written in clay,
yes,
and something that is carried forward,
mm-hmm.
I really don't see Mr. Splitfoot in it.
Neither do I, actually, Brad. Neither do I. I'm cautious in my adhesion to it, but I don't see Mr. Splitfoot in it either. I'm just terribly cautious until I can get what we moderns call facts, you know. But I agree with you. I'm very wary of it all, because I want to be sure of the facts, that's all.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
This is might be a frivolous question, considering what's been talked about tonight, but...
Yeah.
You performed exorcisms and things like that, and I was just wondering if it was possible for an evil person to do the same to someone who believes in God.
It's possible for a person who's possessed to what?
To, you know, perform something akin to an exorcism on someone who does believe in God. In other words,
evil to corrupt a good person.
Yeah, in the way that, you know, you would exorcise an evil spirit from a person, could someone do the same, take a good spirit from a person? Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense in the sense that I know of cases where somebody whom everybody would have said lived with a good spirit, was with the angels, was with the heavenly, was successfully turned around, yes.
Why? You know, so many things seem possible that a casual observer and thinker of our Lord just wouldn't imagine to be possible. Little children condemned to hell by their parents who know how to do it, and and what you just mentioned. Father, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. It does move quickly, doesn't it? From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Casting to 20 states and 5...
A voice. So here we go.
Yes.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hi.
Hello, Art. It's Steve from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I'm listening on CFUN.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to say, Art, that radio doesn't get any better than this, your show tonight.
Well, yes, I agree with you.
Father Martin, thank you for being you.
Thank you.
And thank you for bringing such comfort to me and so many other listeners in this time of stressful times.
Thank you for saying that, sir.
I feel that so deeply. I have a question.
Yes.
Can we as a conscious feeling majority ameliorate the negative devil influence scenario of today?
Yes, we can, by prayer and by fasting. And by having the grace of God in us, if we partake of the sacraments, we'll get that sanctifying grace, and we can mitigate it. The only restriction is that today there is no real coagulated community of believers. Instead, now we're broken up into small communities, and it's usually one-on-one. That's our isolation today, because... In every country you can find, there are three components. There's the government, which is very important today in every country. Secondly, there's the business community. And thirdly, then there's a gaggle of organizations, NGOs, non-governmental organizations, everything from Mothers Against Drunk Driving over to the International Firemen's Association, and the various churches, including the Roman Catholic Church, and we're all in the public square competing for men's attention. No longer is the church, or a church, or the church, no longer has any privileged position in our modern public square. In fact, in the Constitution of the United States, whatever about Canada, the Supreme Court has said twice in the last 4 years that anybody who enters the public square in America with a religious ideology, he has no place. It has no place in the public square. It's a private matter. So that's the difference. But we can make a difference by having the grace of God and by our prayer and fasting. We can cast out devils. We can win. We can merit for other people. We can convert them by our prayers, because that's what Jesus died for. That's why we have the saints and the angels. But well, today it's an uphill battle.
I sure hope that we can, Father Martin, but it seems that there is such an insidious force.
There is. Today
is against us.
I know that. And you have to be very strong.
And the majority of the people are good people.
They are.
Why can we not purge this negative influence from us?
Well, you're asking me then, that's a very concrete question, really. And it's this: what has happened in the last 30, 35, 40 years? What I think has happened, the Roman Catholic Church, of which I'm a priest, and a faithful priest, and I say it deliberately so that you'd know I'm not in any sense rebelling against it. I'm a part of it, and I say my Mass every morning and do the usual things the priest does. The fact is, I think that once the churchmen of the Roman Catholic Church drifted into grave error after the Vatican Council, I think Christ said, okay, you want to go that way? All right, but I'm not with you. And he withdrew his grace. And therefore we have this devastation of Catholic marriages, this devastation of Catholic religious orders, the major ones above all, Jesuits, Dominicans, Carmelites, Holy Ghost Fathers, all devastated. And the lack of cohesive theological thinking and philosophical thinking in the church is glaring and discouraging. Christ withdrew his grace, and that was his decision in view of our infidelity, because our churchmen were unfaithful and are unfaithful to him. I think that's where we are, but we still can have his grace. We can receive his body and blood. And we can be protected by the angels and the saints. But now we're in a battle. There's a bloody battle going on.
It seems that way.
It does. It is that way. And even our Lord himself, the gentle Jesus, said, if we didn't mitigate those times, even the just would not remain in faith.
But doesn't it seem so unfair that the great majority of the people are good people?
It does.
That we seem to have a minority.
It does.
Who are putting this great scourge upon the earth.
I know. It does seem that. And by the way, millions. The Catholic Church now reckons it's a billion plus membership. But millions of those have been led by the nose out of Catholicism into an apostasy, and they don't know it. But that happened in England from 1529 on. Millions of English men, English women, lived and died in grave error because of the leadership of a few men. So God, my friend from the Bronx always says that God has a funny sense of humor. And this is not a sense of humor, but he has a way of treating things, and he deals with each individual soul delicately, tenderly, compassionately, but he deals with groups of people according to certain laws, and he always observes those laws, and that means that the innocent are punished with the evil. Christ himself, on his way to Calvary, the women of Jerusalem who knew him and whose children he had cured and taught were weeping about him. And he said, don't cry for me. No, I'm just the greenwood. And look what they're doing to me. What do you think they're going to do to you?
All right, caller.
Thank you. Right. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Here's something that I suppose we ought to consider, Father.
Yes.
Dear Art, I am writing in advance of Malachi Martin's scheduled appearance on Tuesday morning to convey some ideas to you on the subject of foreboding, to relate these ideas to statements that Father Martin made during his last appearance on your program, and ask that you consider raising them with him as they pertain to his experience at some point during the upcoming Tuesday morning appearance. I think in cases when people have a dark sense of foreboding that something terrible is going to happen to the earth or society as a whole, it's often because they are projecting scenarios occurring within their own psyches and personal lives out onto that world, seeing them unfold out there where they truly are not, rather than within the realm of their own personal lives where they are actually occurring.
That does happen. It's a true statement that of a lot of people. The only thing, Art, is that at an earlier point in this broadcast, you and I both agreed that the general feeling was malaise.
I do agree.
I
do agree. I don't think this is internalizing on my part or your part. Absolutely real.
It's too general. If you read a sober journal like the Wall Street Journal, for instance, I mean, my God, you know... No, all right, they're not pessimists, but their realism is very stark, you know?
Very stark, yes.
Very stark. Take the normal big newspapers and the magazines. There are some Pollyannish people, you know, everything's the best for... And we have them in the Catholic Church, too. We have a man called Carl Keating, who writes rapturously about the new evangelization. And there's nothing going on at all in the Catholic Church. Except decadence. So we have those people like Carl Keating, and we've got to put up with them because they feel happy that way. They do attack the rest of us. But I take that criticism very, very well. We do incline to project things. But in this case, it's co-confirmed by millions of others that I do not feel it's subjective on my part.
The last time, this is sort of a totally off-the-track question, but the last time the Pope was traveling...
Yes.
There was rather extensive coverage of it on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And they had you as an advisor, I guess.
A commentator and advisor, that's right.
And every time that they would start to go to you...
Yes.
CNN would break away...
Yes, they would. It's very funny. We all noticed that.
You noticed that, too.
Oh, yes, we did.
It drove me out of my mind.
I know, but the message I had to give was something that didn't sit well with the powers that be.
Oh, really?
It didn't, because I was interrupted. But I got the point across, all right.
I see. I'll be darned. First time caller line, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Where are you, please?
Hi, I am in Colorado.
Colorado, okay.
Hello, ma'am.
Hi. First of all, I just want to say, Father Martin, you are very much a man with the Spirit of God in you. I just cannot believe, this is the first time I've ever heard you, and this is just, it's just wonderful listening to you.
Thank you, ma'am, very much.
Oh, well, you're very welcome, my God. I just have a question about Satan worship.
Yes.
Well, this might sound kind of personal for me, but I think it might apply to a lot of other people out there that might be listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
About 6 years ago, my sister and I started having memories of things that had happened to us when we were small children.
Mm-hmm.
We remembered going out in the desert. My parents took us there.
Yes.
And it was out in the Mojave.
Uh-huh.
And there was like a ceremony with this leader. And I don't remember too much because I don't let myself remember. But
What age were you?
I was 8, so and she was probably 6.
Was there the use of fire?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you bring it up.
And what?
Now that you bring it up, yeah.
Yes, and was there any use of bones?
Oh, I don't remember that, no.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But we both... remember specific details exactly, you know. Both of us remember the same thing. Remember a baby being killed.
Yeah.
And a woman upholding the baby.
Yeah.
And...
This was Satanist. There's no doubt about that. Usually what they do is they either 8 or
pardon my language, it's repulsive to our minds. Anyway, they eventually arrived at having the baby's bones. And they used that to make a certain type of, not music, but a certain type of sound, which they interpret as the voice of Satan. But it's always dead baby's bones.
Oh, my.
That was Satanism. Are you a Christian?
Yeah, very much. That has what has gotten me through a lot of things. You know,
good.
My belief that there is somebody watching over me and
good.
Whoever it might be, I don't know.
Yes.
But I
did,
guess
you ever did you ever consider Catholicism?
Well, my ex-husband was a Catholic, and I used to go to masses with him.
Yes.
But that got a little bit hard for me.
Was it the new mass or the old mass?
New.
New, yeah. Well, that
it wasn't in Latin, is that what you mean?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
It is. Well, that got me down, too. I never went to it. But
oh, no.
I've always said the old mass and never said anything else. But the new mass would get me down anyway. But
yeah.
I'll tell you, without prolonging it too much, next time you're in prayer, ask our Lord Jesus to enlighten you and to give you strength and guidance, as he has up to this.
That was my question.
Because
how can I help myself to remember? Because I feel like I'm stuck.
I wouldn't be intent on remembering so much. I would be intent on what I do now as regards the worship of Jesus, who is God, and the cultivation of his angels, and seeking out some good priest, a good priest, and talking to him. And surely in Colorado we must find somebody.
Would they believe me, though?
What?
Would they believe me?
If they're a good priest, they'll believe you and they'll know what I know from what you say.
Because I have been to a couple of therapists and just mentioned this, you know, about my past.
Yeah. No,
and they tried to turn it into something else. It was like they didn't believe me.
I know, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, the difficulty is this. It's not therapy you need. It's healing. There's a big difference. Therapy consists of a mixture of conversation and logic and pharmacology.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah.
Now that's therapy, but that merely makes you viable. You know, you can carry on. But it doesn't heal the soul. Only the grace of our Lord Jesus does that.
You're making me cry.
Well, that's clear, though.
Tears are very, very salvific, darling.
Uh-huh.
Don't be afraid of them. But evidently, Christ has touched your heart. And if you pray, he will send you a good priest.
Well, thank you very much.
God bless you, ma'am.
And I hope you have helped other people out there, too.
Please, God.
You take care, ma'am.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Father Martin,
yes.
The last time you were on, we gave out your address.
Yes.
And you got too much mail.
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I got a lot of mail, but we're getting through it all. And, you see, it's unfair if people can't write at least a short letter explaining what's on their minds. Provided they all realize that sometimes it takes a long time to get out answers, even short answers. But there's a desire to answer every problem, every question put.
All right. Father Malachi Martin, obviously. What is the address?
217 East 66th Street, New York, New York, 10021.
Okay. Let me see if I've got that straight. Father Malachi Martin, 217 East 66th Street, New York, New York, 10021.
That's right.
And everybody, please do understand that there's a lot of correspondence that is coming his way, so you will get an answer, but it will take time, as all good things do. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Father Malachi Martin. Hello.
Yeah, Art, I'm glad you have Father on.
Thank you.
My favorite guest.
Thank you very much.
Father, two questions, one from the past and one from the present.
Yes.
During the time St. Paul was talking about, people were talking about the end times.
Yes,
there
were.
And people were selling all their property and giving everything away, and he said, that's very bad. You should stand up right now.
That's right.
And can't that be used right now by the powers to be to make people give up. And in terms of the end times, wasn't in Acts Peter coming out and saying that the end times are now, and he was talking about great portents in the earth. And then in Acts 3, he says that Christ must make his dwelling in heaven until all time, all the earth is made anew, meaning that all earth is made under Christendom.
Right. That's right.
Could you comment on that? And I wanted to ask
you've by merely repeating those words, sir, to my mind, you've said it all. You've really done it. There's no doubt about it. But when Art and I talk, we're talking about the fact that today there is something else taking place,
but
which is apocalyptic in that sense. It's part of the end times. It's the emergence of a world you and I don't know, because I guess from your voice that we belong to the same generation, more or less. Same cultural generation, same political generation, really.
Well, it is not only end times, Father, but it's end times for my program. I'm so sorry. We are flat out of time.
We are flat out of time.
Flat out of time, at least for this round. But one thing is for sure, and that is, God willing, you'll be back, and I'll have you back.
Lovely.
Father, thank you so very much.
So it's over for tonight.
I'm afraid it is.
That's all right, Art. God bless.
Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is Father Malachi Martin from New York. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.